maybe we'd recommence just with a moment of coming into the presence. To be here now, tasting your cake, tasting your tea, aware of the feet you're sitting on, aware of the sounds in the room, just let all the senses, we just be spoke about that this morning, the senses, how they can help us to move beyond this dualistic rational mind, and take us into experience, and it is an experience that we encounter non-dualism, we encounter the divine, the kingdom of heaven. No amount of information, no amount of thinking will get us there. I'm just present, here now, in this moment, in this room. Fully aware. Everything else so. I have to talk now about prayer. What is prayer from a non-dualistic point of view? Richard Rohr summarized prayer as prayer is resonance. Richard Davies says, prayer is tuning in to the ever-present message. Tuning in to the ever-present message. What do you mean by tuning in? My understanding of that is just a little bit like tuning in a radio. Until we get on the right frequency, until we get on the right wavelength, then we can't get the message, we can't get our favorite program. So it's tuning into the ever-present message. So, what station do we think we might find God on? Is it going to be among the sort of the pop channels or up at that end of the spectrum? Or is it going to be NPR and talk shows? And can we get him there?
Oh.
The high fidelity. Beautiful. Thank you.
Stereo.
Yeah. Right. Surround sound.
Broadcast 24/7.
Absolutely. Broadcast 24/7. So the wavelength we find God on is the wavelength of silence, stillness. Be peace in the moment. Many, these are all words, they're all pointers. Master Eckhart said, there is nothing so like God as silence. Nothing so like God as silence. So if we tune into the silence, then there's nothing so like God that we can. Brother Andrew said, importantly, silence leads to the reality of God. Silence leads the reality of God. So it's in that inner silence that we can come into the reality that is God. And Lawrence Freeman, who is a Benedictine monk and the successor to John Mayne, said, prayer is about seeking God in the stillness, beyond words, beyond thought. It is about awakening to the presence of God within us. It's about seeking God in the stillness, beyond words, beyond thought. It is about awakening to the presence of God within us. That's his definition of prayer. That's his definition of prayer.
So, I think there's a difference between silence and stillness, because several of the people had experiences as children, or as you know, you were talking about sports, you can still have that experience. There's stillness, but it's within physical noise.
Right.
So it's not necessarily silence, and stillness is the same thing.
So the experience of stillness you're having in that instant, is that within or without?
Within.
And the physical noise?
Yeah, that's
without. Right, yeah. So, absolutely. So that you can be in stillness, and all the rest of it can be going on. So people who are enlightened, or so-called enlightened, or a very high level of consciousness, still operate in the world. But their abiding feelings, so somebody like Eckhart Tolle or other great spirits, that's just the background all the time is deep peace, background is just a lovely, a joyful, deep joy. And what he says is that times is deeper than others, times is not quite so deep. So, but he operates in the world, operates very well.
I'd be interested to know what people's experience of during the silent coffee hour. I experience more connection with these people than I ever do when you talk to them.
That's great.
And I felt a real need to look into people's eyes. And I thought that everyone was really not establishing eye contact, so I said, oh, why, I must be doing something wrong here. And it was so powerful to me. And I would be interested to hear if anyone else has
thank you for that question. If I can just, it leads beautifully to a quote by Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton said, the deepest form of communication is not communication.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the deepest form of communication is beyond words, it's wordless. He said, it is communion. So, I think that's what you're getting a taste of.
I think what she said, contact is sort of an invitation to conversation. I noticed the same thing. Could make eye contact.
Can you just say that again, please?
I think that eye contact is an invitation to conversation.
Yeah.
In the sense we weren't in the talk.
Yeah.
I think we avoided eye contact, which I noticed.
Yeah. So if you're saying is that eye contact can be an invitation to talk. And it's, all these things are very habitual, aren't they? And so when we have a period of silence, we're kind of outside our sort of habitual mold. And that's really what we're trying to break. We need to break the mold. If we just carry on doing what we're doing, we'll get the same result. So if we want to be more in the peace, more in the joy, come to know God a little better, then we need to find the stillness, the silence, wherever you can. Wherever you can.
May I?
Yes, of course.
And on the other side of that is bringing that peace and silence and stillness and deep soul satisfaction and intimacy of eye contact into the interaction.
Absolutely. What this lady is saying is that the other side of that is that bringing that stillness, that silence, that deep soul contact into the world, really, I suppose, or into relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so important. But let me ask a rhetorical question. But if you were in that, could you stop yourself doing that? If you were in awareness of the divine within, if you're in a place of joy and peace within, could you, your aura would emanate. We've all met people,
mm-hmm.
and you just come into their presence and it just feels.
Mm-hmm.
And you've all met people. I used to get, when I was getting some typing done, when I was living in Dublin, I used to go into a lady, she's always smiled at me, she's always said, hello Sam, nice to see you again, and I couldn't get out there quick enough. The lady was a lot of anger in her, and I just couldn't pick it up. So there's a lot of people, you know, that we carry in ourselves what's going on with it. We, you know, our energy field, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So if you find that peace, you cannot help but give it to others. And this has gone off the point very slightly, but I'll just tell you a little story. But Mrs. Gandhi. Mrs. Gandhi was the Prime Minister of India some years ago, as you know. And she had a sort of little practice that once a year she went to see Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya, probably the most holy man in India at the time, lived up in the Himalayas. She flew up to the Himalayas, she brought a friend with her, and often spent her time with Shankaracharya, on the plane coming back again, and a friend said, well, you look very peaceful, you look very sort of serene. Did the Shankaracharya answer all your questions? She said, yes, absolutely, everyone. And not a word was spoken. Not a word was spoken. So in his presence, she came to a great stillness within, and all her own answers just, she didn't need to ask any questions, it was there. It's always there. This is the ever broadcasting message of the resonance is the ever present message. It's always there. Another expression for stillness is oneness, or resonance is oneness. Mother Teresa said prayer is oneness. And we that was touched on earlier on. It is just becoming one with the divine. She also said something else, that prayer is unity with the divine. And I think when we had that remembering the now exercise earlier, a number of people spoke about oneness or no separation, a sense of that. So here we are, we're in the sitting best we can in silence, in stillness, and just there with the divine. What are we meant to do? Listen. T.S. Eliot puts it beautifully. If you really want to pray, you must first learn to listen. Mm-hmm. For it is in the silence of the heart that God speaks. So praying in a non-dualistic fashion is listening. This is quite challenging for us, isn't it? Because we've all got, now God, here I am, I've got my sister and I've got that, and then I've got my family and I've got my friend down the road, and I'm just a bit worried about my money at the moment. And so we would like to sort of kind of, our prayers really traditionally is to give God a listening. And then just ask him if he would kindly. But in Matthew 6, verse 8, it says, and Father knows your needs before you ask. No need to tell God what you want. No need to tell God what you want. He already knows. People with health challenges, no need to ask for God to heal you. He knows what you want. Deep desire is prayer. Deep desire is prayer. You might say, well, how can I pray for my friends? Or how can I, you know, I need to get on my knees and I need to tell God this. If you care for your friends, if you love your friends, that's enough. God knows.
That's
enough.
Maybe we need other people to know.
Well, that's another question. But in terms of our interrelationship with... And Bernie?
At some other time, in addition to talking about praying and how to pray, why don't we talk about playing and how to play?
Absolutely.
I get together with a group of guys, former work colleagues, a lot of them every Friday, and I know that there's no praying going on, but there sure is a lot of playing.
A lot of joy.
A lot of kidding back and forth, putting down in good fun, a lot of affection expressed, compassion expressed, teasing, and there's a sense of sharing at times, openness that peeks through occasionally. But it all does create a sense of oneness and completeness and totality and wholeness. And I think if there was one word that would describe it, it would be play.
Right. Yeah. And you use many words there, wholeness, oneness. Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's another word, whole love.
Absolutely, God is love. These are just many sides of things. Somebody spoke about experiencing love, and Michael?
I don't know if this is love or not. get out of my mind a picture last night in the news. Gaddafi was bombing, I can't think of the city, but the bombs were landing, and the people were yelling, Allah Akbar, as they were running from the bombs. And that, they're praising God, and they're being bombed. Mm-hmm. They're praying. That's a now experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's war. That's rage.
God's there too. God's there too.
Yeah, but just, I can't, I said, my God, they're praising Allah as they're being bombed, maybe because they've survived or they believe he will help them. But I just couldn't, I can't get that image out. You, the last thing you'd expect someone to do is praise God as they're being bombed.
Well, in the East they say that, you know, they want to, when they're passing over the die, they want to die with God on their lips. Gandhi said that. Gandhi did. When Gandhi got him, that was the thing. I just want to read you one more quote and then I want to move on to the next subject because I don't want to run out of time. And this is a quote by Joel Goldsmith, just on his circuit, what he says praying is. He said, and Joel Goldsmith is a wonderful writer who with many books in the Deafening Shorts and other places. He said, true prayer is developing the listening attitude. True prayer is developing the listening attitude. The kingdom of God is within you, then learn to listen for the still small voice within you. Let the impartation be from God, not to God. True prayer is developing the listening attitude. The kingdom of God is within you, then learn to listen for the still small voice within you. Let the impartation be from God, not to God. Prayer is the divine word coming to us from within. Prayer is the divine word in us coming to us from within. Richard Rohr said that prayer is not about changing God, it's about changing us. And learning to listen, that's quite difficult. You sit down to learn to listen, and I do it myself. A little practice, I'm not going to give you any practice today, but a little practice that is quite a good thing if you want to pursue this, is to just pause a few times during the day and just turn silence within. You can use a little starter like Father, here I am, speak Lord, your servant heareth. Father, here I am, speak Lord, your servant heareth. And then just sit for a minute or two, whatever initially every thought in the world wants to come in, but you do that. And sometimes you'll be, my own experience is that you suddenly something, you'll get an intuition, you'll get what we normally call an intuition, something will just come to you that is important. And what I find is I don't hear any voice, the little small voice is not speaking to me, but I sometimes get a knowing. I suddenly know, yeah, that's it. And that knowing is kind of beyond words and more profound than that. And so once I know that, then...
A Buddhist writer I came across was talking about something like that as part of his meditation practice, periodically asking himself an important question, you know, a profound question, a meaningful one, such as, how do I find peace? Questions like that, and just sitting and waiting, the way you just described.
Yeah, fantastic practice. A good question is a fantastic spiritual practice. A good question is a fantastic spiritual practice. You're just opening it out, and then it will very often the answer will come.
I've begun doing that, and in connection with that practice, I have a little journal nearby, and I write down what it comes to me.
Yeah.
And some of it I know reflects things I've been reading, and some of what comes to me is often rather surprising and a little bit perplexing at times.
It's a great practice, and it's if we want to go deeper, like we've talked earlier on about our childhood concept of God, about maturing and growing and all of that. If we want to mature in our spiritual life, when we mature in our spiritual journey, then we need to do things like that. Otherwise, we're just on the same, around the same circle all the time, saying the same things, defending our, these are our beliefs, our concepts. These concepts all mind stuff. They're all words pointing, but they're not the moon. And if we want to experience the moon or get to the moon or taste the moon, then we need to go beyond that. And practice like that burning will help us. One last question, just lady, just put the floor.
About the aunt just coming in there today. When I prepare for a presentation and where I like, I mean, I had so many questions, that's what it was all about. I didn't know the answers. And I had an enormous amount of synchronicity going on. Things would pop up out of books, just literally. Magazine, I had one seconds before leaving the house. Yeah. I had a question in my mind. About an experience I had, another consciousness experience that an adult head teacher had these things, and I wanted to know. I had a deer that was licking me, and I thought, well, what's the meaning of the deer? And that's the thought I had as I was leaving the house.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, I better use the bathroom. I have old habits. I go to the bathroom, I open an art magazine, and there was a girl being licked by a deer. And the answer that was written underneath is the spiritual journey.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
You're Christine?
Yeah.
Talked about synchronicities. I think that they, when I get a synchronicity, it's heaven speaking to me. It's almost like I'm being assisted. And I love synchronicities. And the more that you acknowledge synchronicities, the more that you acknowledge that this is coming to you, it's almost it. And the more that you trust it, my wife would say, it'll be all right in the day. Just as a little example, recently my niece was coming for a week, and then a friend of ours was coming. Now, how are we going to put them up? And because we've only got one spare room, and so on and so forth. And then the very different age groups, so they got on like a house on fire, these two people. They got on like a, it was a gift that they were there together. A gift that they were there together. Okay, I want to just pause in prayer now, because I want to do something with you that, this is an experiential day. Would you like to just go outside your comfort zone for a second?
Sure.
In terms of, yeah, got a good positive yes there. So I'd like to do, talk a little bit about chanting, and then do a chant. A great spiritual practice of all mystical traditions is chanting. Whether it be the started in the Christian tradition, out in the desert mothers and fathers chanting the psalms. If you go to any Hindu ashram or Hindu group or Buddhist group or Sufi group, you'll find chanting. And why would you want? Why is it doing that? Because in the West here we're Greek influenced and very, very, very cerebral. Well, here's Cynthia Bogart, is it?
Bourgeot.
Lovely French thing. I'll just read you what Cynthia says about chanting, which is put it beautifully. Chanting is the heart of all sacred traditions worldwide. And for very good reasons. What meditation accomplishes in silence, chanting accomplishes in sound. It wakes up the emotional center. And sets it vibrating to a frequency of love and adoration, while feeding the body with that mysterious higher being food of divine life. Sacred chanting is an extremely powerful way of awakening and purifying the heart. Sacred chanting is an extremely powerful way of awakening and purifying the heart. And if we're in non-dualism, we're moving or seeking non-dualism, or we're seeking to move from the head to the heart. And we need to awaken the heart. Now, I have chanted at various times over my life, and it depends on my domestic circumstances, whether and when I do it. I'm fortunate in a new house now, I've got a little hut on the side, and so I can go and do a little bit of chanting there. I did my chant this morning, and I find it fantastic. Chanting is not about the words. You know, you go to a Benedictine monastery, or you go to a Cistercian monastery, which we should visit, and there they're chanting the psalms, and that is absolutely. But it's not the word, it's the sound. What's important in chanting is the sound, the vibration. That's what does the work. We've got various centers in our body, the heart center, the very spiritual centers in our body, and it is the vibration that does the work. So when we chant, let's not worry too much about the words, but let us, much more important to give it full voice and to allow the vibration to go through us, just to be present to the words and allow the vibration to go through us. You can turn the lights off, please. And I was going to write the words up on the board, but I'll perhaps say them with you. The chant we're going to do this morning, it happens to be a Tibetan chant. So I hope you're all open to another culture. And the chant is, I'll say it for you, and then I'll say the word, then I'll say the word, how to pronounce it. It's very short. Then we listen to it for a few minutes, you can practice for a few minutes, and then we do it, and it lasts 11 minutes. So the chant is called Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Almost like this is Om Mani Mani Padme Hum. Hum, but it's Hum.
Om Mani Padme Hum.
And the way it goes is, let me just play it, and then you can hear how it goes, and I'll chant for a couple of minutes, and then I'll come back to the beginning. Yeah. Yeah. This is how it goes. And I'll put it up a bit. Position. The more relaxed the body is, the better, because it's the vibration goes through you. So just to be very, very relaxed. And to give, put your heart into it. So this is somebody has said that chanting is another form of prayer. In fact, it's said in India that it's the easiest form of yoga, the easiest form of union. So chanting, just to let it be, you're present, you're doing something sacred, you're and it's using sound in a different way to pray, to meditate. So be very present in the chant, let your heart be in it, and let your voice be as open and as much as you can, because it is the sound of your voice that sends the vibration through you. And when we finish, it'll run for 11 minutes. When we finish, we just sit with your eyes closed. I'll just invite you to do that for a few minutes. Sit with your eyes closed and just to be aware that the, let the breathing continue and be aware of within the body. Let it go now. So let the eyes be closed.
Oh, my name.
allowing the eyes to remain closed. Allowing the eyes to remain closed. Allow the breathing to be as it will. Just let the breathing flow as it will. And let your attention be in your body. Just let your awareness be in your body. Not thinking about anything, but simply experiencing how your body is at this moment. You just do that for a couple of minutes. Attention current in your experiencing how you are in your body. How you're feeling this moment. Thinking comes in, just gently back to feeling, to experiencing. Aware, very present to your state at this moment, not commenting on it, not analyzing, just simply breathing. And now coming back to the room, just in your own time, let the eyes be open. And though we're a couple of minutes over, what I'd like to do is okay with you, it's just have a brief sharing. How was chanting for you when you sat in, when you sat in the silence, when you sat with the awareness within? What did you experience? What were you feeling? What did anybody notice? It's been.
I noticed a shower in the morning. Practically gone.
The chatter in the, Christine says the chatter in the mind was practically gone. And this is a fantastic practice. It's a bit of there, chanting his prayer, chanting his meditation. Fantastic way of stilling the mind. And that's no doubt part of the reason why all the traditions use it. Thank you, Christine. Anybody else? What did you notice?
Relaxation.
Relaxation. Jim experienced relaxation. So when I chant, it helps the body because you're sending a beautiful vibration through the body. And there's a hand here, simply said. Carol?
Balance.
Balance?
A sense of balance.
A sense of balance, that's part of the gift of the chant, part of the gift of coming more down into the heart. Talks about, Cynthia talks about, and others the same, is the helping to open the heart center, hoping to just balance in between the head and the heart. And there's another lady here, nothing? A sense of peace. So this is a sense of peace. We did the now exercise this morning. I said we'd try as far as possible to be experiential today. So this is another way to come into non-dualism, another way to come into the moment, into the get a little taste, little glimpse of the kingdom of heaven. And so Lily, will be back.
My heart continued rocking during the chanting. It felt as though it was being rocked lovingly. If you
can
put
it
in silence,
it's that
rock.
Yeah.
Being so
open. Yeah. It's felt as though heart was being continued rock. Was that, a nice feeling?
Oh, yeah.
And Mary?
It was a unity, chanting with everyone, what was wrong.
Yeah. What Mary is saying here, the chanting was a unity. There was a unity with others, and there was a unity with the music and the drum. I've seen another hand here.
It reminded me afterwards
of all the things that people said, but it reminds me of the rosary.
Yeah.
And the energy of the Latin.
Right, yeah. So it brings you to another place within yourself, away from the busy mind, presumably. And there was a hand here, someplace.
I had the experience toward the end of chanting. My dear, loving friend who is gone, she really entered into my heart, and she was right there with me, and the quiet time,
yeah,
was still there.
This mantra is, no, this is Dalai Lama's mantra, by the way. This mantra is known as the mantra of love and compassion. And I think somebody mentioned love here this morning, about his love, the mantra of love and compassion. So it is to, you'll find that if you practice this, that when I was an accountant for many years, I lived from here up. I had no idea that I'd need anything below that. And I would attribute for many things to actually coming out of here and dropping down a little bit. There's still a long way to go, but chanting was one of the things. I used to put on a CD in the car, and as I was driving along, I belted out with the thing, and just to help to take a bit of that what's covering there.
Eventually my body begins to tingle.
Yeah, this lady says, eventually my body begins to tingle. That's an experience I get quite often. It takes you into a place of, see, this is what's doing the work. This is helping you to open and become more present and to come out of this, which is this barrier to experiencing heaven, to experiencing the divine. Thank you for that sharing. Some wonderful sharing.
I thought I was all alone.
You thought you were all alone.
It was so quiet.
It was so quiet. Isn't that great? We obviously live in a noisy. Thank you for that sharing.
Could you mention again what that would mean in English?
The literal translation is, it's the lotus, with the jewel within the lotus. And a kind of an English translation of that would be, or an English contemporary sort of version, would be, all hail to the divine within. Or it's a kind of a greeting of the divine within.
Let's give that.
Thank you very much. So I'd just like to finish with my thanks to you, and just to say thank you very much for your presence, for the great sharing. See the gift of the sharing, the gifts that you gave to each other, the sharing, the questions, and I've got a poem I'd like to read, if that's okay, if you can bear with one. This is by Henry Longfellow. Let us then labor for an inward stillness, an inward stillness and an inward healing, that perfect silence where the lips and the heart are still, and we no longer entertain our own imperfect thoughts and vain opinions. But God alone speaks in us, and we wait in the singleness of heart that we may know His will, and in silence of our spirits, that we may do His will, and do that only.